time now to go to Sunday school with the professor. Giants third base coach Ron Wotus with Marty Lawrence.
I didn't know you wanted to get involved with the discussion, Mr. Helper.
On your home of Giants baseball.
Doesn't sound like the way you think.
KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.
Brought to you by River Islands, one of the country's top-selling master plan communities just across the Altamont in Lathrop. Where else can you live on a lake, next door to a park, or walking distance to your kid's new school? With 10 new neighborhoods, River Islands is the one place you can't afford to miss.
All right, great to be back with you. Whoa, how are you?
Marty, I'm doing real good. You know, it is a holiday weekend, which, you know, when we're playing during the season, you really don't feel the holidays. We're always working, whether it's a holiday or Friday, Saturday, Sunday, you're playing games. So I've had a nice day today with some family members, and it feels like a holiday to me.
I know, it's true. You know, it's funny. And last year, we didn't have games Memorial Day or July 4th. Because I wasn't on.
I know.
And you very rarely, when you're in this business, get those days off. So it's nice, and I'm glad that I could touch on the meaning of Memorial Day, and I'll do more of that as the show goes on. But good to chat with you, and just to touch on River Islands for a second. You and I talked about it last week with all everyone working from home, and who knows what the landscape of business is going to look like. Google and Twitter telling people, you know, don't come in right away and all this kind of stuff. You can work from home. You know, living out in River Islands becomes a whole different proposition for people in the Bay Area. And I know Laurie's in real estate, and how real estate is really booming in the Bay Area. River Islands becomes a lot more interesting for people who would work at home and then walk out and play bocce ball.
you're exactly right. I mean, if we all look at our own situations, it's like myself right now, I have some time at home, right? We all can't do all that much. And, you know, I love my neighbors. I love my neighborhood and where I live and my house. And it's nice to be surrounded by things that you want to do that's very accessible. And, of course, River Islands has all that. I mean, the sense of community they have there. When we go to their Christmas party and get a chance to talk with those people up there and see all the great amenities that they have, it really does feel like a small community. And to your point, I mean, who knows how things are going to change now, right? I think a lot of businesses are telling people, as you said, to stay home. And especially in the Bay Area, we have some of the leading tech companies in the world here that let people work from home. So it may change the landscape, and it only makes a place like River Islands that much more attractive if you have to commute a little bit. But it's really not that far away, and I know we all have to commute, but it would be nice not to have to commute that far, wouldn't it, Marty?
Oh, come on, you're kidding. You walk out of your house, and we got the bocce ball game going, and you know, you're on the trails, and it's the gateway to Northern California, so I'm glad we could do it. Look, well, this crazy world we live in, and let's bring in Bill. Speaking of the crazy world, Bill Lasky, how are you? Bill, you there? Well, he's almost there.
Sinker, slider, bone chip, are you there?
I am okay. Here. How are you, gentlemen? I was talking to Ralph.
Okay, very good. Hey, getting in here, and I was saying this crazy world we live in, and just to start off the show, and, well, you're involved with it in a very major way, and, Bill, of course, you've been through this as a player. All the protocols that came down, and, well, when you were on last week, we just sort of got a glimpse of it. You've had a week to kind of digest it. I know it's been talked about a lot. Maybe some of your thoughts about some of the things that you like or maybe don't like about what could be ahead for baseball.
Well, you know, the thing about it is I think the proposal that was put on the table to the players still remains to be seen on what's going to transpire. So So, you know, I hate to get out and give my opinion on too many things. I think my biggest concern will be that I will be able to do my job as a third base coach, be able to communicate with the player in a certain situation to help us perform and win the game. You know, things like giving signs where I can touch my face, you know, from dugouts where you're not real visible to the players. Some of those things were talked about. But again, I think all these little details are going to be negotiated to the point where it's probably not going to look like the proposal we have at this point in time. So I'll just wait and wait and see what comes to the table. Whatever it is, I'm ready to go. I think the country needs baseball. I hope we can come to an agreement. I know the owners want the game on in the league, and the players do too. That's what they do. That's what they do for a living, and play baseball. So I'm hoping the two sides could come together and do this thoughtfully and safely, and let's get the game going again.
Yeah, well said, Ron. I agree with a lot of that. I just think some of the things they threw out there, from baseball players not spitting, sunflower seeds, no showers. There was a lot of change there that they threw out there. And I think that's probably the first, you know, bid or whatever they want to throw out there. This is what we want to try to enable all the players not to be around each other as much as they can. But some of them, I mean, the whole sheet was probably about 6 inches long about the things you can't do. I just think it's going to come to a head this week, and I'm hoping, and we all hope, baseball will be around the corner.
Yeah, main thing is be safe. As you said, just be safe and the health of everybody, and then things will go from there. But I will predict you will be able to take a shower. You won't have to wear your uniform on the plane. I'll predict that.
You know, Marty, you're exactly right. I can't imagine playing a baseball game, not being able to shower, and then get on a bus, get on a plane, and you still haven't showered, and fly a couple hours and get to the hotel, and hopefully you can shower then.
Right.
So let's hope that that's adjusted to some degree.
It will be, but the main thing is that people be safe and healthy. That's the main thing. So, all right, I just want to touch on it because it does affect you, and Bill, you've been through it as a player, and we are fans now, too, and watching, and we're trying to be safe, too. So I'm glad that we could touch on it. Another part of this, I'll throw it out to you guys, on the list, you can't do a high five anymore, and you can't do that home run dance in the dugout and all that kind of stuff. Well, you're going to have to come up with a new way to slap something as the guy goes around third base on a home run.
Well, I don't know if I'll have to come up with something too much new. It'll be the players that are going to have to adjust, because already when we have all those fancy handshakes before the game, you know, I was just a straight old normal handshake like I've been doing since I was a young man. You know, that's my thing. That's the way I do it. And then at third base, you know, I'll be fine. I'll give a high five. I'll give a low five. I'll give the knuckles. I know I'm not going to hand off the football. You know, maybe I'll do the same thing without making contact, right? It'll be a high five with no contact, a low five with no contact. I would imagine that's the direction I'll probably move towards.
All right. Very good.
You know, one of the things, Marty and Ron, is no fighting. They kept talking about the nobody can charge their mound. No one can literally fight each other. The first thing that comes to mind, of course, is the Astros and how many times they're going to get pelted, and they're not going to have to do any retaliation for it because that is going to happen.
Well, I think
good point, Bill.
That's true. Go ahead, Will.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, obviously I think there's no fighting in the game as it is, too, if we really think about it, right? I mean, nobody wants to fight, so but there's still fights. So I don't know how a lot of these things are. It's going to be a new normal for all of us. And, you know, hopefully we'll get together, and it'll be interesting to go through it and see how we can pull this off under the conditions that we're going to have.
Did you ever get into a baseball fight, Bo?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've had a couple. Sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Well,
what's your record?
What? Well, well, nobody got hurt. That's probably not a good thing to say. But I charged the mound once in the minor leagues after getting pelted. You know, it was never me hitting the home runs. It's the guy ahead of me, the big guy, and then the little guy comes up and they drill you right in the ribs. And I had enough of it. It's happened a few times. And the other time I had a little mishap was with my own player in AAA. And I was on third base, and he hit a chopper in the infield. And I should have scored. You know, I should have scored. I didn't read it right. I stayed at third base. I cost him an RBI. And he comes running across the field, waving his arms up in the air at me. Well, you know, I didn't particularly care for that. And we got in the dugout, and we went at it a little bit. And, of course, we were pulled apart very quickly because the whole team was there. But, you know, minor things like that. Now, Bell's another story. I'm sure he's gotten to a lot of brouhahas with the opposing club.
Well, you know, Ron and Marty, I never had anybody come out at me. They always walked down the right first baseline after getting hit, and then the jar and back and forth, and reasons why I hit him if I needed to, or reasons why he thought I hit him. But nothing like that. But the ones that when you run from the dugout out are the ones that I were always included in, from Mark Davis drilling Enos Cabell to, you know, different things like that where both teams came out. The hardest one I was with Dusty Baker, both of us running out there. And Enos Cabell was just ripping on Mark Davis, and punches were being thrown. Somebody said something to Dusty, and Dusty landed a right punch and knocked the dude out, and the guy fell right down on top of me. And I'm on the bottom of the pile, and this guy's totally knocked out. Well, Dusty Baker was a Gold Glove puncher. He was a boxer back in the day. So the piles are all peeling off, and this guy was out, and he had put blood all over my jersey. So the first thing they peel the guy off, Dusty goes, "Oh, my God, are you okay?" Because my jersey was just slammed with blood. And I go, "I'm okay, but he's not." And they peeled this guy off, and he was, his mouth was bleeding. A couple of teeth were rattled. But those were those battles right there when you're in the middle of the pack. And I know Ron's always trying to grab people off when you see him when there's brawls. But those are the ones when you can really get hurt if you're in their middle, or, you know, sucker punch from the back of the head.
Yeah.
Those things happen more in our era, Ron, than probably now. But, yeah, you know, you still had a couple good brouhahas the last couple of years.
Yeah, I think it's the end of that. I agree with you guys. We will not see that anymore. That's for sure. The best story I ever heard was Billy North. Did you guys ever hear this story? Billy North was playing for the A's, and Doug Bird was pitching. Remember Doug Bird for Kansas City?
Sure.
And, he's facing Billy North, and he's up with the A's, and Billy North hits a ground ball to short, and they throw him out at first, and Billy North goes halfway to first, and he goes to the mound and just slams Doug Bird. And the whole A's team is watching. They can't figure out what's gone on. But 3 years earlier, Doug Bird hit Billy North, and Billy North swore that if he ever saw Doug Bird again, he'd get him. And he just made a beeline. And the whole team, no one knew what he was doing. And he went out and got into it, Doug Bird. So that's the best one I heard.
Yeah.
Crazy.
There's a lot of them. A lot of them in the earlier days, that's the best ones.
Well, who'd we lose there? Everyone there?
I'm here. I didn't hang up on you. I think, Bill, did you hang up on us?
Okay.
I think Bill had enough.
Raph will get a bat. All right.
Yeah.
Well, while we're doing that, well, what we like to do, and we've had fun with this, I really have enjoyed it, and that is spotlighting some of the coaches that you've worked with over the years. And, Bill, are you back? All right. Raph will let us know when Bill is back. Bill is back. All right. We're spotlighting some of the coaches that you guys worked with over the years. And tonight it's one that I really enjoyed getting to meet, and sort of a crusty old baseball guy, and that is Billy Hayes. How about that one, Woe? Let's start off with Billy Hayes as a coach.
Yeah, well, great coach, great man. Brought a lot of fun to the clubhouse, and the players really gravitated toward him because he was so knowledgeable, and he just knew how to connect with people. But he had a little fire in his belly, and I think players appreciated that too. I mean, he was a hard knocks type of guy.
catching coach. Did a great job with the catchers. Of course, he was our bullpen catcher for all the success that we had. Coached first base for the Giants as well. And he did everything in the game. You know, he was a minor league manager, a bullpen coach in the big leagues. I just mentioned the other two jobs that he had. So a world of experience and just a great all-around guy. You know, he also had quite a reputation as a player. You know, he was one of the best catchers back in the day. And Marty, I think you interviewed him on this, on his draft day. And, you know, Billy's a good old boy. And we talk frequently now. We stay in touch and we love to talk the game and talk about old times. So he's certainly watching the Giants. He's watching what's going on with baseball. And he's shaking his head a little bit about the game of baseball, right? How it's changing so much. So he's definitely an old timer.
Well, I do go back, Ron, when Billy was catching, back in the days when he was with the Cubs and faced him in AAA when he was in Des Moines and I was in Omaha. That's how far back I go back with Billy. And you're absolutely right. He was an outstanding defensive catcher, had a great arm, batted in the lower part of the order, didn't really have much power. But as a catcher, he was that defender that guys didn't try to steal on. He was that good. And then I saw him again when he got to the big leagues. So I travel a little bit through our careers together, and, of course, with the Giants, good friend of ours, good friend of mine, spoke to him a lot. And, of course, he's loving life now, hunting and fishing. And that was the first thing he did when he left San Jose. He goes, I don't need to coach anymore. I want to go fishing. Went to Nebraska and went hunting fishing for a couple weeks. But he's that type of guy. He's got the knowledge of the game, fantastic catcher-to-pitcher instructor, taught the game so much. And baseball is going to miss him because he was that kind of guy that you'd want in the clubhouse as a manager or coach.
Yeah, I taught Buster Posey a lot behind the plate. I know that. When I got to know Billy Hayes, he was working with Posey a lot. And Hector Sanchez as well. And he used to say about Hector Sanchez that he had blue suede shoes. I said, what are you talking about? He says, well, he moves so much beyond the plate like Elvis Presley. We call him Blue Suede Shoes. So that's what Billy said. But, well, you know, Billy has a draft story. Come on, that you guys used to get on him about.
Well, he was a number one pick, right? I mean, he was one of the top picks in the country. And one of the things that, you know, Billy, myself, Flan, we used to have a good time, you know, right, and getting on one another. And we, you know, Billy and I both didn't have the tremendous career that we would have liked to have as a player. So, you know, we kind of joke with one another how bad we were. And, my comeback to Billy was, at least, Billy, you got one thing going for you. I mean, you didn't have a long major league career, but my God, you were drafted number one, and I can't believe what the scouts saw in you because you were drafted before a player that ended up getting drafted after you, and the guy has a league named after him, and that's Cal Ripken. So they took Billy Hayes, the scouts, before they took Cal Ripken. Can you believe that? I mean, that's pretty impressive for a guy that didn't play very long in the big leagues.
Very good. That's very impressive. I tell you, I'd like to see everybody that was in front of Cal Ripken that year. I bet you 9 out of 10 of them probably aren't even playing or never got to the big leagues. That's an amazing story.
Yeah. He's a good baseball guy. He really knew catching. And it's funny, you know, when I first came over to KMBR in 2010 in spring training, we would get together every spring, and he would just lay out to me what each catcher had to do. And he really understood the game. So, yeah, I'm glad that we could, you know, spotlight him a little bit. Because he was a huge part of the winning teams of 2010, 12, and 14, and I don't think Buster Posey becomes the catcher he is without Billy. So I'm glad we could do that. The other thing we enjoy doing is going back and looking at a couple of the players, because time goes so fast and these rosters change so quickly. And I was thinking about it. You could have a 50-person roster coming up to deal with, and you know, you may have 20 of them of minor leaguers because they have to get their work in. Who knows what it's going to look like? So we forget a lot of the players because of the turnover. But a couple that I'd like to bring up and get your recollections of. One is Rajai Davis, who still has a major league career going. People forget he was a Giant, right, Will?
Yeah, he was. He was a giant, and immediately I connected with Raja because he's from New London, Connecticut. Huh. And, you know, I grew up in Connecticut, but he actually went to the same high school that my mom went to when she left Brooklyn and moved out to Connecticut. So immediately it was fun to have a fellow Connecticut man on the team, and we talked and we became very, very close. And, you know, Raja was one of the best base stealers in the game, and we had him. He was fearless. You know, Bill, when you get a guy on base and everybody knows he's going to steal, and you can throw over five times, but you can't stop him. You know he's going to go. And Raja was like that. I mean, he had just tremendous speed and first steps. And, you know, he would have had a nice career with us, and we loved him as a player, but he fell into that niche with us is we needed more offense, like we did a lot. I mean, we were built on pitching, if you think about all these years, and we were always fighting for offense. And so we ended up moving. I think Raja, I don't know if we designated him or traded him, but we needed a player that could swing the bat a little bit more. But the thing about Raja, if we had more offense, he's a championship player because he played the heck out of center field. He could run the ball down. He could steal bases. And that is a valuable guy to have on your club when you're playing close games and you're a winning team. You know, what a weapon he was. As a pinch runner and as a defender. And to your point, Marty, I think that he went on and really had himself a very nice career. A lot of people didn't think he would stay in the game that long because he couldn't hit that well, but he made himself into a decent hitter, and what a fine kid he was too. You know, just a salt of the earth. He's the type of person that you'd want to marry your daughter. That's how nice of a guy he was.
I was just going to say, Ron, he had to have been one of the nicest guys I ever met. Always had a smile on his face. And yeah. After he left the Giants, I think I watched him more with the A's because he ended up playing with the A's for a few years and really had some great years over there. But I remember him with the Indians. I think he only played a couple of years, maybe 1 year over there. But his speed in the outfield, he always caught that ball. It seemed like he'd never get to it, and he had that extra little speed that we always talk about with the great defenders, that little extra burst that catch that last second catch. And he had that. Stealing bases, you're absolutely right. He would be a torment at my side, thrown over. And you know he's kicking another little half step, even more and more, and he'd be gone. Those kind of runners, it doesn't matter how many times you throw, you change your delivery, different things of timing. He had that flash of a speed, and that's why he's still in the game. He's played for several teams. I think it was in Toronto also he played a couple of years. So
yeah.
Good for him. Tip his hat to a guy that really, really worked at it.
Yep. And I've had him on the show, and the nicest guy. Well, you're right, the nicest guy in the world. Good, you know, family. I think there was someone who was in religion or something. There was something in the family background, and just a, you know, real solid family. And I remember him being the fastest guy that I thought was in baseball. I thought he was the most impactful runner that I had seen in baseball at some point. That's how fast he was. I guess he was he must have been a good base runner, right?
Well, he was just fearless. I mean, he was fearless on the bases. He was so aggressive. And, you know, I really appreciated that. But, you know, he turned himself, to Bill's point and yours, he turned himself into a pretty good hitter. And he kept his career going and had some big moments, I think, in Cleveland, the World Series, when they were in the World Series. And my goodness. And, you know, we players like that, it's funny because as time goes by and he's gone, he's not with us, we always find ourselves having discussions when we're looking for players 5, 6, 7 years down the road. And we were still talking about signing Raja Davis back. It's interesting when you have a guy and he's gone and then time goes by and you end up, you know, wanting to get him back. So, great memories of him, Marty. What a great guy, as you're saying.
Yeah, good. I'm glad we could do this and bring it back because people forget about because the game turns over so quickly, and it's going to turn over even more after they figure out what's going on with the minor leagues. So I'll give you another one. How about Yusmeiro Petit? Now, it's not that long ago, but, you know, almost a perfect game and retired so many in a row. And this guy could pitch anytime, rubber arm kind of guy. Yosmero Petit, what about him?
Yeah, well, another pro. I didn't know him personally, you know, off the field like I did Raja. But I will say this, kind of when we talked about Mota a few weeks back, that this guy is one of the best teammates you could possibly have. You know, he didn't say much. He was kind of soft-spoken, knew the game. The other Latins looked up to him, but you really appreciated him because, you know, he was always a guy. He was always the 25th guy in the club or the 12th pitcher on the staff, you know, was never had to really fight to make the team because if you looked at his stuff, he basically had one pitch and it was a fastball. His slider was below average. He threw a little changeup. It was a below average. And, to have the career that he had, he was one of the best. Long guys that we had, obviously the game that stands out is against the Nationals when Belt hit the home run in the 17th or 18th inning to win that game. I mean, he won us that game alone. He went five innings and held them down on the road. But that's the type of stuff he did. And, of course, he went on after, you know, he got caught in a situation where he was going to make some money and you couldn't blame him to want to make the money. And you know, we just needed to get a little more value out of our roster, and they felt he was expendable. But he went on to continue to pitch. He's still pitching, and he's still getting people out like crazy with one pitch. I mean, he could dot that outside corner with the best of them, and that's really who he was as a pitcher.
Boy, I tell you what, Ron, when you think about 2014, just from that Washington game, he really was that guy out of the bullpen to give you multi-innings, and that's the first thing I remember about Petit. You knew he was going to give you two, three, four innings if you had to. And from the Giants, I just pulled him up. He's been in so many games in the last few 80 games, 74 games, 60 games his last 3 years, and, of course, he's across in Oakland doing the same thing. But with the Giants from 2014 on, he was the guy out of that bullpen that stretched in the long man role, spot starter, and what I liked about him, he kept the ball down. He really, and you're talking about that one fastball, he had enough on that curveball and enough on that slider just to show the hitters just a little wiggle to think what's coming next, but he spotted that fastball very well.
You know, why I like doing this is, see, I didn't know that, and to hear the scouting report, it really puts it in a different perspective, how good he is, and the control. It's like a Bartolo Colon who could put the ball exactly where he wanted to put it. But what about he almost pitched a perfect game. Well, remember that against Arizona? Yeah. How about that one?
Yeah, it's just amazing. It's amazing what can happen when you give certain people opportunities to perform. You know what I mean? You give them a chance, and he had a fight for everything. You know, every opportunity he got, he got another opportunity because he got the job done. And then you put him in that spot starting role, and he got some starts that 1 year. I'm not sure if he was starting a lot that year or if that was a spot start, but I don't think there was anybody on that club that wasn't pulling for him so hard. I mean, you're always pulling for a guy to get a no-hitter, but because of who he was and what he's done and the thankless job that he does, you know, never said boo, give him the ball, you know, long guy, eighth inning, ninth, whatever. He's going to take it, and he's going to do what he did. And, Bill, you reading off those statistics, he's still doing it. He's really kind of an unsung hero and really, you know, overlooked and how valuable he was to the success of the Giants, and I'm sure the other clubs feel the same way about him.
You don't win without him.
Yeah, one of the things Bob Melvin, reading a little note what Bob Melvin said, he goes, the reason why I like Petit, I can put him in anywhere in the game, long, middle, or setup, and he does the job. And that's why he's in 75 games, 80 games. I mean, that's if you have that kind of honor from your manager and you know you're going to go out there and battle like Petit does, that's the kind of guy you want. And Ron, you manager, you coach, you know exactly the kind of guy he is. He's going to give you everything he's got that day and give you a little bit extra if you need another inning. And you don't find relievers like that too much.
Mm. Good stuff. Yeah, good. I'm glad. Well, we picked two good ones again.
Yeah.
Yosmero Petit and Rajah Davis. Very good. Enjoyed it. All right. I'm watching TV this week, and, you know, I love these highlights that they show of the old games, and I'm watching the 1991 World Series. And there's a play that I think was even on the cover of Sports Illustrated or whatever. But Ken Herbeck is the first baseman for Minnesota. Ron Gant is the Atlanta Braves player. And Ron Gant gets a hit. And the runner who was on first goes to third. And Gant comes wide around first base. They throw behind him. Greg Gagne throws it to Herbeck. Gant's got his foot on the bag, but kind of leaning a little bit, like maybe he's tipping over just slightly, but not at all. And Herbeck just picks him up. Whoa, and takes him off the bag and tags him, and they call him out. And I said to myself, that's baseball. That's Ken Herbeck, who is a very good ball player. Ken Herbeck, smart ball player. And I said, that's one I got to throw at you guys and see what you think of that.
Yeah, well, you know, Herbeck got away with one. Let's say that, because I watched the video of that play recently. And, you know, that's the beauty of it. The other thing I'll say about it is, you know, he got away. Listen, he pushed him off the bag. I mean, he was falling away, but when he tagged him with the glove, he pushed him, and Herbeck knew exactly what he was doing, and he really should not have been called out. But that just tells you how difficult of a job the umpires have. You think about it. I mean, you're not anticipating that, right? How can you tell for sure when I know you're looking at the play, but it's much easier when you're watching it on TV or you're removed from it or you're watching it after the fact to see it the second time to say he pushed him off. But the reaction of Pat Corrales and Ron Gant when he got pushed off that base was just beautiful to see. People ought to take a look at that play because it's very, very entertaining. And, yeah, Herbeck got away with one.
It was because he literally pushed him right off the bag and tagged him. Now, again, that would have been a good brawl with Herbeck and Gant, those two big boys right there. But, you know, when you think about stuff like this, Ron and Marty, you start thinking about hidden ball tricks. That's the first thing you would think of besides getting pushed off a bag. And, you know, back in our era, Ron, there was so many hidden ball tricks from middle infielders, putting the ball underneath their armpit or putting it behind the glove. And it works sometimes, and it still does, but it's not used that much in the modern era of baseball.
Did you ever see it work in the big leagues, Bill?
Yeah, it did. It really does. And the shortstops and second baseman were fantastic with it. But, of course, the pitchers, it all relays on the pitcher because he can't step on the rubber. On the mound, he's got to more or less get off the dirt. And that's where the pitcher's really got to put a little act on what he's doing, tying a shoe or something. But he's got to get the umpire to say play ball. It's got to be live when they do it. So, yeah, it has happened.
You ever do it, Will?
No, I haven't. We've practiced it and talked about it. I know when I was in the minor leagues, I did it with our pitchers talking about, hey, if I fake a throw to you, you know, like Bill said, they have to be in on it because they can't go up on the mound. I think it happened to us in San Francisco. Someone got one of our runners. I can't remember the year and the situation, but I recalled it did happen. And, you know, what comes to mind is my good friend Tim Ireland, who I managed against in the minor leagues. He managed to
Ron, that's the same
the
person
Salinas
I thought
club.
Of.
Bill, yeah. Well, he
yeah, he was
he
a
great
teammate,
guy.
Too.
He was a teammate of yours?
Yeah, he was. That's great. That's the first person I thought of about this whole thing.
Well, you know what he was famous for? I mean, Tim Ireland was, you know, he was a very heads-up baseball man. He'd managed a long time in the minor league, should have been a major league coach or even a major league manager. That's how much, you know, I believe in what he could do on the baseball field. I managed against him in San Jose 2 years, and I always felt like he was the toughest manager I ever managed against because he was on top of everything. But you remember the old senior league in Florida? They had they put a senior league together. Well, Tim Ireland led that league in hitting 1 year, and I guess he was down there for a couple years. And the story goes, he was in the infield, and he pulled a hidden ball trick on one of his senior teams, right? And what do you think happened when he got the guy out? What do you think proceeded after that?
That's right. Brawl.
Big old brouhaha brawl that Bill was talking about. And, you know, so you're not going to see that in today's game. Guys don't even think about doing it today.
Yeah, you know,
Ronnie,
maybe.
Ireland, just to hit on Tim Ireland, and you hit it right on the head. He was the senior guy when I got to AAA with the Royals. He was there and he was kind of like the captain, but he was like the second manager. He would bring it aside, talk about different things. A great inspirational guy. I don't know if you were around him, Ron. He used to eat raw garlic before the game and literally clear out the whole dugout, literally taking two full bites out of a garlic clove. And then he'd run away, run out and go, okay, we're going to win now, fellas. We weeded off all the spirits. But Ireland yeah. was the great middle infielder, second base, shortstop, but he would put the ball underneath his armpit and tell the guys, I don't got the ball, I don't have the ball. And then sure enough, he'd pop the ball from the armpit and the glove and get him. And he was so good at it, he'd be jawing with the guy, talking to him, getting him to relax. And I don't know what he says to get him off the bag, but boy, he was so quick at it. What a great memory about the same guy, Ron.
Well, Timmy's been a good friend over the years, and I've talked a lot of baseball with him, you know, even when I was coaching in the big leagues, and he was done, we talk about situations and things. You know, he was always a guy, if I had a chance to manage it, I had my eye, I wanted him on my major league staff. And anyways, great baseball man. I'm glad we could bring him up.
So it's funny, when I thought of this, I thought of you, Wo, because you're an infield coach and you're an infielder. And the play that comes to mind for me, and it's sort of the tricks of baseball, you know, the throw to second base that goes into center field and the guy slides in and you make the attempted catch and then you fall down on him so he can't get up. Now,
right.
You know, and of course, you know, that you see that all the time. Two questions. One, did you do it? And two, do you teach any of this stuff to these guys today?
Yeah, well, you know, I never did it. I never fell on the runner because they could get you. Players do that. You know, there's been a lot of players, as you're saying, Marty, to do that. And I think, you know, the one thing that I do teach is, you know, slapping the tag down hard. I played first base one year because I had shoulder surgery and I couldn't play short or the other side of the diamond. So they were just letting me hit until my arm got better. I played first base. And I remember, you know, slapping the tag hard on these guys and kind of like Herbick would do, you keep the glove on them and you push them a little bit. And that's one thing I tried to get Belt to do a little bit, telling him, you know, don't baby that tag. I think all the great first basemen, when you know, I was playing a game, whether it's Will Clark, whatever, you know, you slap that glove down and, you know, and let the guy know you're there. And then you even say, oh, sorry, if you hit him too hard. But the next time you get the next throw, you hit him even harder. But, that's, you know, those are the things that you do. So I never fell on a runner. I mean, I've taught the thing with at third base. You know, I like to tell the third basemen when there's a sacrifice fly, balls in the air, the runner's looking when to tag up. As you as a third baseman, you want to get in line with the fielder catching the ball, so the runner can't really see when the fielder's going to catch it. He's got to look around and see, you kind of obstruct his view to make it real difficult on him. Minor things like that is what I've done over the years. I'm not sure about you, Bill, if you've done any of this type of stuff.
Well, no, Ron, I wanted to ask you a question, Ron, about this. And this happened years ago when, like, the second baseman would put his knee down in front of the bag. And you couldn't get the runner's hands in the bag. Didn't they? Was that a rule change, or did they do something like that? Because it was like blocking the bag. Am I right there?
No, it's pretty much legal. I mean, as far as I know, they've never changed it. But, you know, Utley was the best at doing it. Now, I've done that in the minor league. Sometimes it's kind of like you're catching and blocking the ball at the bag at the same time. A lot of infielders do it. They're not actually trying to do it, but then there's guys like Utley that would do it on purpose, and I've done it in the minor leagues on purpose a couple times. But again, you know, you're risking a fight, you're risking, you know, some cleats in your knee. So there's other things that go along with that. But it is a good play. You know, when it's a big out and you need to win the game, I mean, people do those things, and that's the way the game used to be played, but it's kind of out of the game today, is it not?
I think so.
Yeah, because I remember that. I remember guys doing that all the time. Even first basemen, when the pitcher would throw to first base, you'd throw it low so they could get their knee down to block the hand. And that's what a lot of good first basemen, especially left-handed. But I remember so many guys slap-tagging like you were talking about. Will Clark was the best at it. He would slam that guy's hand at first base all the time. good guy. And a lot of guys. Robbie Thompson did it at second a lot, too. I mean, the quick hands, like Ron says, the quick hands to get that glove down and slap that hand as fast as you can, it does get that runner thinking twice about taking a little extra lead.
Well, two things. One, you know, why I love all this stuff is because baseball's been around so long. There's always been this kind of stuff in baseball. When they only had two umpires, and the umpire was out of position, if you were rounding third base, the third baseman would grab your shirt, you know, and no one could see that, you know. So that, you know, it's always been part of the game to see what you can get away with. And the other thing, yeah. Listening to Woe and Bill talking about where you throw a ball, and Woe, I imagine you teach this, that when there's a play at the plate, you want that ball thrown, I would think, thrown into the catcher ankle high. So he catches it right where that runner is sliding. Is that right?
Well, you know, I've always gave the infielder, and even myself, a little bit margin, more margin for error. I've always felt, you know, going home on a play, if you could throw it there, that's great. But I've always felt like a pitcher throwing a ball to first, or if I get a throw from a pitcher trying to pick a guy off at second base, I wanted the ball thigh high or knee high, and then let me put the tag down, because I always felt like I could actually make a quicker tag from a thigh high throw than I can to where you kind of get handcuffed with the throw. Okay. And when a guy fires that ball hard, I mean, yeah, it's right there on the base, but sometimes that's a difficult throw to catch. So I can make a better tag with the ball being a little bit higher than perfectly on the bag is the way I've always taught it and the way I feel. And that way, you know, especially pitchers throwing the first, you know, they're not all like Bill Lasky. They don't throw the ball perfectly. You know, you want a little margin for error. You aim too low, and now the runner's on third base, and the first baseman's chasing it. So, you know, you want a little bit more margin for error there.
All right. I love it. This is what baseball is all about. And this, when we see the games again, this is something we could look for. You know, this is these are things you look for. It's a great, great part of baseball. I will take a break. Obviously, Ron Woad is with us and Bill Lasky. I'll tell you guys, Alex Pavlovich wrote an interesting column this week on the five most disliked opponents for the Giants sort of in the last 20 years or so. So we can go back a little further than that, Bill, for your era as well. But, well, maybe think about it, and I'll give you the list that Alex put out, and then I'll ask you that. And also, of the 10, 12, and 14, the World Series, they had a sort of an article in MLB or ESPN this week about biggest World Series moments. And I'm wondering, in your minds, of the winning World Series for the Giants of these three World Series, or even if you want to go back to 2002, the biggest World Series moment for you guys. So I'll ask you both of those when we come back right after this.
Talking baseball with Marty Lurie on KNBR 104.5 and 680, the sports leader.